father had died at Hebron, his courage failed, and all Israel was dismayed. Now Saul's son had two men who were captains of raiding bands. The name of one was Baanah, and the name of the other, Rechab, sons of Rimmon, a man of Benjamin from Beeroth, for Beeroth is also counted part of Benjamin. The Beerothites fled to Gittaim and have been sojourners there to this day. Jonathan, the son of Saul, had a son who was crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And as she fled in her haste, he fell and became lame. And his name was Mephibosheth. Now that the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, Rechab and Baanah, set out, and about the heat of the day, they came to the house of Ishbosheth as he was taking his noonday rest. And they came into the midst of the house as if to get wheat, and they stabbed him in the stomach. Then Rechab and Baanah, his brother, escaped. When they came into the house as he lay on his bed in his bedroom, they struck him and put him to death and beheaded him. They took his head and went by the way of the Arabah all night and brought the head of Ishbosheth to David at Hebron. And they said to the king, "Here is the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, who sought your life. The Lord has avenged my lord the king this day on Saul and his offspring." To eight? What's your
name? Get through eight. Okay, so David is king. Abner has been deceitfully murdered. And now what happens?
Revenge.
It's not revenge. What happens? Who was leading Israel at the time? Not Judah, but Israel.
Ishbosheth.
And the leader, really, the strength was who?
Abner,
the general. And people knew that. Okay. These two men, what were their names?
Baanah.
Remnah, the Perathite, Rechab, and Baanah.
Sons of
Rechab and Baanah. Rechab and Baanah. The sons of Rechab and the Perathite, Rechab and Baanah. These two men, what do?
They kill somebody in his own house.
Who did they kill?
Ishbosheth.
The descendant of Saul. And they delivered his head to David. So,
David has a covenant with Saul regarding that.
What do you think were the intentions of these two men's hearts?
Nothing.
Put yourself in their position.
They were looking for favor.
Looking for favor.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I don't know if they're trying to take away the kingdom from Ishbosheth so that David would be instated as king over Israel.
They very well could be trying to save their lives. Why is that?
What's that?
They very well could be looking to save their own lives. Why is that?
Oh. Well, they went to David fleeing then the nation Israel because Israel would come against them.
Well, no.
No.
Who's the more powerful now, David or the house of Saul? David's going to replace the house of Saul. He's going to therefore replace any of the house, everybody in the house of Saul, because they're not going to be loyal to him. And replace generally means what?
Kill.
There can be no threat to the line. So they were seeking favor for sure, but they probably were also looking to save their own lives. So the question is for this particular, these eight verses, is how often do we try to do things for God with an ulterior motive? Because they probably thought they were doing the will of God as well, siding with the anointed king. And that clearly, was that God's will for them to murder a man?
No.
In his sleep?
Yeah, right.
Or how sometimes you act without knowing all the facts.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't know all the facts. Obviously, they didn't know David at all because
no.
They didn't know that he mourned for every single person in Saul's house that died.
Exactly. So, let's take it personal here. This is what we're going to have to share. What do you think of time? where you did something for God with an ulterior motive. Please feel free to share stories that embarrass your spouse. Okay? This is being recorded.
I have always tried not to. And even as a child, before I really knew Christ, I would try to avoid asking for things for me, and knowing that that was God's will for us to be seeking self. But, and it's taken, I had to kind of realize that, hey, He doesn't want us to pray for each other and stuff, and I should be asking for prayer at times, and, but as far as seeking Him for His an alternative one, I try to find out. I recall a specific time when I've done that, which should have been. But
you just can't remember anything, because what you're saying is that you are perfect and different from everybody else in this room. Thanks for your vulnerability. Appreciate that, Roger.
Are you talking about like something like this book that came through the prayer of
Jabez?
Yeah, and then... and
No, I'm not talking about the prayer of Jabez.
Oh, okay.
I'm asking you, in your own life, can you think of a time when you tried to do something for God, but you really had an ulterior motive? Or not necessarily doing it for God, but you're doing it for somebody, but you really have an ulterior motive. Mm-hmm. So, you all have wanted a cookie from Mom, and you give Mom a kiss because your real motive is you're buttering up so you can get a cookie. All of you are guilty of that.
Mm-hmm. No, okay? We never did that.
So, you all have something?
No, we came from a family that didn't touch.
Okay.
But you can ask him.
Lloyd is the freak of nature in this class, okay?
It's just the way it was in the Midwest.
Yeah, okay.
It's the way those people are.
The ulterior motive is a lot more easier.
What?
The ulterior motive is a lot more easier when the person doesn't know your thoughts.
Yeah.
God knows your thoughts, it's fruitless. He's going to know.
That doesn't mean you would still do it.
That's more like tricking somebody.
Yeah, you ever tried to trick somebody or intentionally deceive somebody, not necessarily to hurt them, but to get something.
Like when you're
it's
a
like
kid
a
and you're trying to say, don't you want this? Because you don't really want what you have.
This is my attempt to get us to get beyond the study and to share and get to know each other. And you guys are looking around, and yes.
I'm sure I've done it with my kids, I'm sure.
Oh, me too.
What?
I'm sure I've done it to my kids all the time, you know.
Oh, manipulations. That's what you're thinking of, too.
You know.
Wow, yeah.
It is a manipulation.
I'm sure there's 100 examples. Not one thing that I can think of when you said that. I can exactly remember my age and everything when I did this. I was going into the 8th grade, and I wanted my ears pierced.
There you go.
Okay. And my mom didn't really want to get my ears pierced. No. All my sisters had to wait till they were 18, and there's 10 years between anyways. So, and also we didn't get allowance or anything like that, so I couldn't earn money and say. So what I did was I washed the dishes every day that summer without being asked. I washed the dishes every day. It kind of backfired, but it in the end I still got what I wanted. But because my mom was not really gonna fall for it. I washed the dishes every day. I did all of them every day. I mean, I was home all day. I made sure they were done after dinner. I cleaned the kitchen and stuff. And when she would say, that's nice, you did it. I said, I want to get my ears pierced. I really wanted to get my ears pierced. And she basically said, well, that's not going to happen. And this was at the end of the summer, after all summer. And what it took was my older sister talked her into it. They never told that older sister no to anything. So I still got my ears pierced. So it kind of worked, but I was trying to manipulate her into it.
Sure.
I was trying to butter her up. Because I was willing to do all that stuff for her.
We live didn't fear getting whipped to do anything to anybody, mom or dad. Except my other brother. He did.
I probably prayed for that too, by the way. I'm pretty sure. I was a very new Christian at that time. I had become a Christian going into the seventh grade because I was saved at a VBS. And I'm sure I prayed for that at that time too. Can mom just know if I do this?
Oh, wow. Let me give you a formula here, okay? And you guys are going to figure this out. Ask a few questions. In light of this story, the first eight verses, what these two men did, was it a evil act or a righteous act in their minds?
In their minds?
In their minds, they thought they were righteous.
I don't think they thought it was evil.
Okay, so it's a righteous act, right? What was their motivation? Was it pure or impure?
No. It was selfish.
Impure, selfish, okay? And what was the result? Did it merit them anything?
Well, we don't know yet because we didn't read that.
I'm sure I can imagine what's...
They're going to die. Yeah. They're going to die.
I can't read.
Because we already know how David is, so we're like, well, yes, this is not going to end well for these guys at all.
Here's the formula. Righteous work. That's the act. Done with selfish ambition. That's the motive. Merits us nothing. So, Marie got her ear pierced. But was it done in love? No. And if it's not done in love,
I've had problems ever since. With my ears, that's better than that.
If not done in love, then, yeah. Okay?
Yeah, I think you can say that with, like, tithing. You know, if I tithe, God bless me. I've thought that before in the past. I've just given up, and God will look on me with favor and increase that 100 times.
Or money bags without holes. Keep the money bag with the holes out of your house.
I promise to do that.
Look at the last verse 8. We know what the scriptures say. Repay no one with evil, repay them with good. For vengeance is mine, says the Lord. And look what these people did, these two men.
And then they said they did it in the name of the Lord, like they had been directed to do it or something.
They said the Lord took it.
The Lord has given my Lord, the king, vengeance this day on Saul and his descendants. Let's look what happens then, verses 9 through 12. That's Marie's cue to read.
What? Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
But David answered Rechab and Baanah, his brother, the sons of Rimmon, the Beerothite, as the Lord lives, who has redeemed my life out of every adversity, when one told me, behold, Saul is dead, and thought he was bringing good news, I seized him and killed him at Ziklag, which was the reward I gave him for his news. How much more, when wicked men have killed a righteous man in his own house, on his own bed, shall I not now require his blood at your hand and destroy you from the earth? And David commanded his young men, and they killed them and cut off their heads and feet and hid them beside the pool at Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the tomb of Abner at Hebron.
Why would they cut their hands and feet and hung them up beside the pool of Hebron? Why did he do that?
Because their hands shed blood and their feet were swift to do it. I don't know. It just seems that's...
Yeah.
It must be a tradition of theirs to do that. Symbolic. Well, it is the tradition in the Middle East to cut hands off. Thieving.
For thievery.
Okay, I wrote down here, don't presume to do the work of God without God's leading.
How often is it done?
What?
In the church.
In the name of God.
earthly church has done a lot.
Well, that's what committees are for.
So, Lloyd turned to Exodus 17:6. Shannon turned to Numbers 20:7-13. What does Exodus 17:6 say?
Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it, that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel.
Okay. Numbers 20:7-13.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the staff and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron your brother, and tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water. So you shall bring water out of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle. And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock? And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice, and water came out abundantly, and the congregation drank and their livestock. And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in me to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. These are the waters of the Meribah, where the people of Israel quarreled with the Lord, and through them he showed himself holy.
Okay, so now, what happened? What was the difference between Exodus 17:6 and Numbers 20:7-13? Same miracle, right? Different result. Read your verse again, Lloyd.
Behold, I will stand before you there on the rock at Horeb, and you shall strike the rock, and water will come out of it that the people may drink. And Moses did so in the sight of the elders of Israel. He was providing a necessary thing for just survival.
Okay.
They were thirsty.
So what was the command from God?
Strike the rock.
Strike the rock. Okay. I'm going to stand before you, strike the rock. They couldn't see him, I don't believe, but perhaps Moses could. But he stood before the congregation, and there's the Lord in front of him. And the Lord said to strike the rock, and the water will come. Okay? Now, let's read your story again, Shannon.
And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, take the staff and assemble the congregation, you and Aaron, your brother, and tell the rock before their eyes to yield its water.
Stop. Same situation, before a rock, but the difference is
they weren't supposed to hit it.
Moses wasn't supposed to hit it. He was supposed to
tell the rock to yield its water.
Now, what happened? Read.
So you shall bring water out of the rock for them and give drink to the congregation and their cattle. And Moses took the staff from before the Lord as he commanded him. And Moses and Aaron gathered the assembly together before the rock, and he said to them, hear now, you rebels, shall we bring water for you out of this rock?
Stop. What is that?
Rebellion.
It's rebellion, but who's going to get the glory?
Moses.
So we? You can't do that, Moses.
I didn't perceive it that way. I perceived that he was ticked off and let his emotion just run with rage and not thinking clearly
of
who he just spoke to, who he never spoke with.
Well, in that state of anger,
the wrath of man does not work the righteousness of God.
Who gets the glory? Why didn't he just say, I'm angry with you, but the Lord has directed me to bring water from this rock this way? Not with his staff, but by speaking to him. He speaks and the water comes out. He doesn't do that, does he? Now what happens next?
And Moses lifted up his hand and struck the rock with his staff twice.
Stop right there. No. Mm-hmm. No, he was not told to do that. What was he told to do?
To speak tell to the rock. To yield it to him.
Now what happened? What's next? Water came out, right?
It came out abundantly, and the congregation drank and their livestock.
Now that's grace.
Yeah, because he did it anyway.
He did it anyways, even though Moses disobeyed.
But...
Keep going.
And the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not believe in me, to uphold me as holy in the eyes of the people of Israel.
Stop right there. What does that mean, to uphold him as holy in the eyes of the Israel? What does that mean?
I mean, he took the credit.
He took the credit, but he just simply did not obey.
Yes. Right, obey.
When you obey... You are then treating God as holy. And he did it in front of the elders of the congregation. And look what happened. That means you can finish reading, Jim.
Okay. Therefore, you shall not bring this assembly into the land that I have given them. These are the waters of Meribah, where the people of Israel quarreled with the Lord, and through them he showed himself holy.
Okay, so what has Moses gone through up to this point in his life? We have a miraculous rescue from the water as a child, grew up with Pharaoh, realized he was Hebrew, wandered 40 years, God calls him, the burning bush experience, all the power he gave him. That God gave him, all the miracles that was performed through him, the 10 plagues, leading the people through, the Red Sea, all of that, the intimacy with God, he sees him face, not face to face, but sees his form, you know, all of that, and yet he is still capable of disobeying God. Now, does the punishment fit the crime?
In God's eyes, it does.
In God's eyes, it seems a little severe to us, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. Does a punishment fit the crime for what Adam and Eve did?
There was a lot of mercy in that because they had disobeyed him.
He disobeyed him.
And he's holy.
And what happened to her? Okay, she started to die. What else happened to her?
Sorrow.
She'd have both pain in childbirth, and she would be in constant conflict with her husband. Okay? But she would also see her boys, one of her boys,
killed.
A lot of suffering, okay? It goes all back to her choice to step outside her role, take on the role of a man, be deceived by the enemy and to disobey God. And of course, every time Adam went out to work, it was hard. All because he listened to his wife, didn't step in, and he abandoned his role and all of that. To me, that punishment seems far greater than that momentary choice. But that's not how God sees it.
It's a perspective on when we disobey. Mm-hmm. Why should we have grace?
See, what Moses did as well is he acted presumptuously, and that's what we call the sin of presumption. We see this a lot in the church. Well, you know, since God worked this way, this one time, he must be going to work this way all the time. Right? And it's putting God in a box. So, actually we're out of time, we're over time limit, but so again, what did you learn tonight?
Read the last two sermons.
Read the last, okay.
Don't do righteous with selfish ambition.
Mm-hmm. Well, I learned that Roger has never done anything in his life with an ulterior motive. He's a very vulnerable guy. Debbie, I always let you off the hook. Anything you learned tonight? I understand you're tired from being married to Lloyd. Find some strength.
Sure. Up there all day. You gotta give it a break.
We also need to examine our motives, I guess.
Yeah.
To really be aware, you know.
Yeah, because how easy is it to not think you are doing something for a self-right, you know? Mm. I mean, these guys, you know, did they really know they were doing it? You know what I mean? In their heads, they were...
Big grin on their face.
Yeah.
You know.
What we did, and like, oh.
You think they didn't know that it was wrong to murder? They did.
Well, they were the head of the raiding party, so were they party to that?
Yeah,
I don't know.
That's kind of.
I would think so, though.
But I don't know. I mean,
thou shalt not murder. Yes.
Can you imagine what's going to happen to the people that are alive now, and to these Hamas terrorists that do what they did? We can stop people alive that are trying to justify their terrorism and barbaric acts.
Not all the Hamas
people are trying
do
to
that. I was reading an article.
No, all the Hamas do that.
Not all the PLO people are
right.
for them.
Hamas.
Well, I was reading one that was doing that. He studies history during the day. This is several years ago, and then he cooks up, I forgot what the word was, Hassan's or whatever they're called, Hassan, or it's a rocket. And he cooks up the sugar and the fertilizer together to make the propellant for them. And they create the explosives for them out of fertilizer as well. So they got the propellant and they put the detonator in. But he said that they do not. And I don't know if he's speaking for himself. He might have been speaking for himself. But they take great pride in doing that, you know, killing Jews. Yet at the same time, they don't want to kill children. So I don't understand his reasoning. Because he'll kill the adults.
Right. Well, my point being is that there are people that are trying to justify blatant barbaric savagery. And how will God punish? We see him here. This was an attempt at righteousness, a perverted understanding of it, which was probably going to happen anyways. Okay? And they lose their life instantly. And we look at, you know, we call it a tit for tat punishment. That's what they say when I've studied what Adam and Eve did. What do I mean by that? You did not lead in the relationship. Therefore, all of your offspring are going to be forced to lead. You did not follow. You challenged his authority. Therefore, you're going to struggle with that and all your offspring. Okay, and that constant is why marriage sucks. It's hard. I don't know any other way. I've never known what they knew before that. But that's a tit for tat, you know, punishment. Okay? And then he threw on, the ground's not going to give. You're going to have to increase pain in childbirth. So it's not going to be easy. You can't talk your way out. You can't justify. You're not going to get off. It's going to be severe.
Yeah.
It's going to be severe. And that's why we should grow in appreciation every day of grace. Because I deserve it every day. And I need grace every day because I deserve his punishment every day. You know. we'll go up to lesson 14. He actually becomes king over all of Israel. And I remind you again, he was 17 years old when he became king, when he was anointed, we believe. And how old was he when he became king over Hebron and Judah, whatever?
30.
So I think a couple of years, 3 years passed, something like that. So how long was he waiting for the promise of God to be fulfilled?
He said
13 to really fulfill it, probably 16, 17 years. There's a lesson right there, you know. Because what we do is we get a word from God or a promise from God, right?
Want it to happen tomorrow.
It's a, and we get him that, yeah, hurry up and wait is what we pastors call it.
What should happen is in 5 minutes, it doesn't have to be.
Yep. Hurry up and wait. That was one dumb man.
7 years.
14 years, wasn't
it? Yeah, for each.
14. Oh. You talk about Jacob?
Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? Is it chapter 25 or 27? I'm just like, I want a child. Give me a child. I got a child. You don't have a child. How miserable must have been for him. I want a child now. You give me a child. I finally got a child. She's one. We're even now. I want to be one up on her. You give me a child. They go back and forth. Back and forth. Can you imagine how awful it was? My child looks better than your child.
I'm assuming they had separate tents. Serious.
I don't have where everyone has their,
you know?
Yeah. No. That would.
And then he's forced to. It's natural. He's going to have favorites.
Right.
And he loved, was it Rachel or Rebecca?
Rachel
more than the others, and they were seeing it. Obviously they
did.
You know, a dysfunctional family. Okay, you know these children, and they're trying to kill each other now. They've taken one of my favorite sons and lied to me about him. You know, I'm talking about tit-for-tat punishment. What did he do? He deceived his father with his mother, pretending that he was Esau. Mm-hmm. He got deceived with the blood on the multicolored robe of Joseph.
Yeah.
The irony of it all. And so you can't escape it. You can't. So, what are you laughing at, Marie?
I'm just thinking of the trouble they could get into. They didn't have any TV to watch, so they had to make their own drama. They had to create all kinds of drama.
Yeah, it's a pretty argument for why video games don't make people violent. Because video games make kids violent. They were violent before video games. They had no fake guns either. They had guns. They had sticks and stones, and they made
spears,
swords. Yeah.
Rocks.
So.
Well, even the slapstick comedy back in the 40s and such, it was a very violent society back then. You know, bopping kids with their hands and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't quite like this society.
No.
I have an uncle. My uncle, my dad's sister married a Palestinian. My Uncle Joe. But they're actually believers. So, and he moved his whole entire family to the States. But when they lived in Saudi Arabia for years, and she would talk about go around town, seeing somebody's head on a pole. You know, it's quite different. Yeah, as a deterrent.
If there's one thing that is good that is coming out of it, I saw and I don't mean this, you can turn it off now if you want to, Frank. I read where a lady